Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you on this Friday morning. Chase will be back on Monday's program. You just made the list. Coming up at high noon, Pierre McGuire. Talk a little hockey with him also in the third hour of the program. And we'll do some trivia to round out the week and today's show. Right now, though, we say hello and good morning to Casey Alexander, fine head basketball coach of the Belmont Bruins. Casey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Getting ready for little Cubs Brewers tonight.
Opening day. Let's go.
Didn't think we'd ever get here, but we are here finally.
Better than nothing, right?
No doubt about it. How have you been through all this? It's been a while since we last chatted. How are things in your world?
Oh, big picture, they're great. You know, but like a lot of people, you know, the disruption hasn't been any fun. Although it's had some, I guess it had some merit to it. There are some good things that have come out of it as well. I spent a lot more time with my wife and family, so that's good. But I wish things could get back to normal sooner rather than later.
How tough is it because everything is, you know, we've learned over the past 4+ months, it's fluid and it's always in motion and there's stuff being thrown out there and sometimes it sticks and sometimes you reel it back in and you start over, especially in the college basketball world. I know you guys have got a little bit to go, but, I mean, just the constant uncertainty. How have you dealt with that?
Well, that's the most difficult part. You know, you're kind of running an organization, a team that is used to routine and used to a structure, and to not have any of that makes things very difficult. You know, we hope to get our players back here by June 1st and have camps, and that didn't happen. And then we were hoping it was July 6th, and that didn't happen. And then we were hoping it was July 20th, and that didn't happen. And you know, so it's hope and wait, but we've been disappointed time and time again. We'll get through it though.
So when's the next projected date?
We are we've given up is probably not the right word. We've decided that we're just coming back when school starts. There will be no summer activities for our team. So we were practicing for the NCAA tournament on March 13th, and the next morning told everybody goodbye, and I haven't seen them since, and I won't see them until school starts.
Isn't that crazy? That seems like such a long time ago.
In our world, it feels like an eternity.
Yeah, and so you've obviously gotten used to Zoom, right?
That's
we all have. Yeah. So how is that going when you get to talk to them? How are they dealing with it?
Oh gosh, it's been a total roller coaster, honestly. You know, we spent a lot of time in those first 3, 4, 6 weeks staying connected because, you know, the finality of the season and just everything being so unusual, you know, we felt like we had to really, really stay connected, you know. But then you kind of move on from that time, and, you know, we spent 3 or 4 weeks doing a book study. We did 3 or 4 weeks talking about the social injustice and racial, you know, problems of America and, you know, all that was going on with that. And then since then, we've just kind of we've mellowed out a little bit, to be honest with you, because we're tired of having to get together that way. You know, let's make sure we stay connected. Let's make sure that you know, that we're taking care of everything we need to. But at the same time, you know, let's don't meet just to meet.
That's interesting with some of the things that you said you hit on, because you seem like you're a guy that's a communicator. You're a guy that's there for your kids, and you know, you're not a closed door guy. Like I'm not here to, I just want you to play basketball and do what I say and don't come talk to me. But how have those talks gone? Because I think for the coaches that do struggle with that stuff, and you're certainly not in that category, I think you better wake up and realize you need to take a different approach, right, with today's student athlete.
Yeah, you're missing the mark. You know, if it's just about coaching your team and winning games, and I'll admit, you know, that's an area that I've improved in a large degree over the years. I wouldn't have been quite as intentional about covering those bases, you know, or in the early days. But you know, that's what our players deserve. You know, this, you know, the experience they get playing basketball for us, you know, it better be worth a whole lot more than what we do on the floor. And you know, these guys need to be men when they walk out of here someday, and that's our job to help them get there.
From when you got, we've done a lot of reflecting during these last 4+ months, as we all know. When you got took your first, when you got that opportunity, longtime assistant, and then you become the head coach. And so that first year to where you are today, when you look back, I think you were just touching on a little bit of it, just the growth of you and what you've tried to do. What would be some other things that maybe come to mind from that beginning stage of you being a head coach to where you are today? What's changed?
Well, I think you just, more than anything, you learn how to manage. I think when you first get the job, you consider it to be more of a matter of, coaching the team. But really, especially in college athletics, managing the program is what occupies all your time. They say, like in the NBA, for example, coaching is about 90% X's and O's and 10%, dealing with people. And in college, it's almost the opposite. It's about 10% X's and O's, and it's about 90% dealing with your team and doing things like this, trying to academics, recruiting, you name it, things that don't really have anything to do with coaching your team on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Are you optimistic? I know this is a loaded question in late July, but do you feel good about everything getting started on time, or is there still a lot of apprehension and crossing your fingers?
Well, I'm crossing my fingers, but I'd be lying if I said I was optimistic. These things can turn. We all know that. It's it seems to change from day to day to some degree. And I've probably been a little more disappointed than I should be allowed to be at decisions that are made so long term, canceling things for the whole semester, not having school for the whole semester. I think my opinion is some of those things are pretty mature decisions, but I'm not in position to make them. So I'd love for things to work out. I'd be shocked if it's business as usual.
Talking to Casey Alexander, head coach, Belmont Bruins. And, Casey, one thing that I know everybody's had to adjust with is, how do you evaluate future talent as you recruit? You can't hit the road like you have been before. So what has the system been like?
The evaluation has been really difficult. We haven't a lot of people don't know that there's also been a dead period in recruiting from basically the time that the NCAA shut down, and it goes through at least the end of August, and I think that's even going to get extended, I've heard, to the end of September, maybe even the end of the calendar year. So what that means is we cannot recruit off campus in any way, and nor can recruits come onto campus for an official or an unofficial visit. So they can only go through admissions if they want to visit Belmont, for example, and we can't meet with them while we're here. So it's unusual times for sure. AAU organizers, summer event organizers, they've kind of wised up a little bit, and they're having events pretty regularly. The last two weekends, our staff has been glued to live stream and watching games and trying to evaluate that way, but nothing's as good as doing it in person.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I can remember way back when I was being recruited, there would be an occasional team that would say, or a school that would say, send us a tape of a game. Of course, you dig through and you try to find the best game you've ever played and say, okay, this is the one I'm going to send. But I would have to, like you just said, you can't pick everything up on tape. So what's different when you watch a tape of somebody as opposed to when you see them live?
Well, one thing is what you just mentioned. I mean, we're basically going to get huddle highlights from every player that, and we could all even, Aaron could put together some good highlights if he worked hard enough,
I can find five good minutes of Darren. I think it's Trevecca basketball camp where he was a counselor, where he was demonstrating to some 7 and 8 year olds. I think we could find some good clips.
Wow,
of Darren
this
there.
Took a turn.
So we sift through those pretty quickly. It'll give you an idea, maybe, what kind of athleticism somebody has. But seeing guys in game action, is way more valuable. And so these tournaments that are going on currently, generally every weekend now, they're helping us a lot, especially with younger kids that we haven't seen a whole lot. We can at least watch them play 2, 3, 4 games over the weekend and see how they play. But, it's hard to gauge size, speed, body language, those kinds of things with, through video. I'll say this, though, on a recruiting note, I will add this. Recruiting is about all we've been able to do, just phone calls, FaceTime, Zoom meetings with parents and everything else. And so I actually think that approach to recruiting during the last several months has been very beneficial. We spent a lot of time face-to-face through Zoom or FaceTime or whatever with recruits, and I think that's been helpful.
What effect do you think this will have, just this summer when you go down the road and this class coming up through? What do you think this will change the landscape, or what adjustments will people make? So when we see stuff on the court down the road, when we look back on this, we'll say, well, this is because so-and-so. I have noticed, I mean, there's that one great kid that decided to commit to Howard, for example. So, I mean, I guess he's maybe an outlier, but what effect do you think this is going to have?
I think it'll have great effect in a lot of ways. I mean, like that player, for example, there may be, you know, that may induce other people to make those kinds of decisions, and all of a sudden you've got top 100 players that are, you know, frequently looking at some of the HBCUs and that sort of thing. But I still think in the big picture that's a minimal, you know, change. I don't see any way that what we're going through right now will be helpful in decisions, and I say that pretty a matter-of-factly because, you know, there are players that are getting offers right now to places where I don't think they need to be getting offers from. There are people that are making commitments to schools and they haven't even visited the school, you know, in any way, shape, or form. And so, you know, I can't imagine that over the long term that those are healthy decisions.
One more from the athletes' side of things. I'm sure there might be some people out there listening. From the top level, as you said, the recruiters come to them. Right, they're going to be all over the top players. There will be a big cross section of players though that are trying to find the right school for them, and they want to get noticed by the right level of player. And they're not going to get noticed the way they normally do. What kind of suggestion? What helps for you? I'm sure you get plenty of tapes, like you said, come up to your doorstep of a guy that thinks he can be the right guy for Belmont, and he sends you a highlight tape. What's the best way to do that?
I'll tell you what. The hardest part is for the recruit and his family to discern the difference between one school and the next, because every coach is going to tell you how great their program is, how great the players in their program are, how their style of play is awesome and we play fast and, you know, our school is this. And, you know, so how does a recruit know the difference? And typically, you know, you understand the difference when you visit, you know, hey, this is not really a location, you know, even looking online. I mean, every school looks beautiful online, right? I mean, you can find pictures of, you know, some really good stuff. But then when you actually visit, you say, gosh, you know, some places this is 100 miles from civilization, and some places this is really old and dark campus, and, you know, this is a dangerous area. This is, you know, not to mention spending time with coaches, spending time with players, meeting with academic, you know, people on campus about your particular major and interests. So you miss out on a lot when you can't be there in person. And, you know, and it's a little bit easier to get sucked into just kind of the glitz and glamour of recruiting and not really the substance of recruiting.
Casey Alexander with us, Belmont head coach, men's basketball, also a big baseball fan. So, Casey, I'm looking at the NL Central. I see all these predictions. There's not much that separates the top from the bottom on paper there. So give me the argument for the Cubs to have it all come together this year.
Well, unfortunately, I think that's because there's a lot of mediocrity in the NL Central this year, which is good for the Cubs because I think that's what they are as well. You know, I think the 60-game season, we all know, gosh, anything can happen. You know, you've seen those, you know, we're usually talking about it in April and May and think, golly, can this last all season long? And rarely does it, but over the course of a couple of months, anything can happen. So I think that gives hope to all of us, even the Mets and the Indians.
That's right.
There's a lot of truth to that. Although the Mets division is not friendly, our divisions, Casey, they are friendly. You're right. We're in the right divisions. There's a lot of teams in our division. You never know what you're going to get. You've been hitting them, by the way? You've been on the links, hitting them straight?
Yeah, that may be the biggest blessing of this whole thing is how much golf I've played in the last several months.
You've gotten better?
Oh, gosh, I hope so. I've wasted a lot of time if I haven't. I'm not saying I'm any good, but I'm better.
Good answer. Hey, good to talk to you. You and the family continue to be safe, and have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
We'll try our best. Thanks, guys.
All right, that is Casey Alexander. Always always fun to talk to him. Belmont basketball coach, and you know, you just heard it. And I think it's the right answer. Pens and needles, fingers crossed, a lot of hoping, you know, whatever, however you want to describe it. I don't know how anybody could feel good at this point, right, what's going to play out in the coming months, because there's just no way to know at this point in late July. That's the tough part about it. That's kind of what we've been going through. And I would say right now, in effect, I think his exact words were, it would be a little bit crazy, or I think the word maybe he said was naive, to think that it'll be business as usual. I think that's about as fair as you can get, because I don't think it'll be business as usual, and I suspect you don't think that way either.
Well, it's hard to envision that it will be. All we can do is hope, right, and do what we can individually. We've had this, you know, cue up the greatest hits. We've been going over it over and over and over. Is what we all do collectively does play into what will happen, what we are going to see when the school year starts and what sports we see. So do what you can. You know, be safe, wear the mask, stay distant, take every measure that you can possibly take.
The Western Conference teams will be packing up their stuff, and their small group will head to the hub city of Edmonton. We've got an update on Rogers Place, remember? They had some damage from a storm, some flooding.
Boy, did they. That was so bizarre.
I know. We'll tell you if it's okay to go to Rogers Place on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from Belmont basketball coach Casey Alexander here on Darren Donick and Chase. Chris Rose, who had a good baseball discussion with him in the first hour of the program. You just made the list coming up at high noon. We'll have a prize to give away with that. Hopefully you will get involved in the show. And also we'll talk to Pierre McGuire, some hockey with him in the third hour, and then some trivia in the final hour of the program. Some things on tap here today on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought up Edmonton as the Predators are off today. We were at Bridgestone Arena Tuesday, Wednesday, and yesterday. They had some inter-squad scrimmages the last couple of days. The White rebounded yesterday with a victory over Gold after Gold had taken the 4-1 victory the day before. They'll get back at it tomorrow, and then they'll pack up their stuff and they'll head to Edmonton. And Edmonton sustained some flooding last week where their arena was hit pretty hard. And I was like, are you kidding me? Of all the places it happened there, the hub city for the Western Conference, well, teams have been told, Willie, it is okay. The facility's good. Everything is fine. There's no issues. So pack your stuff up this weekend and head on to Edmonton. Everything's going to be okay. I was wondering. I mean, it was. You do wonder if you could, you know, if that was something they were going to be able to get done. But the league has told everybody it's okay. Come on to Edmonton. Let's get after it. So just wanted to pass that along. Also, something
well, when,
you passed.
When
go
that
ahead.
When video came out, say I was like, what is going on? I thought it was. Like, I didn't know what to think. I thought somebody might have just put, like, a goofy video from a couple years ago during the construction of the place or something. And they were, like, for real. I haven't even read up on, you know, what all exactly happened there. But that was pretty scary. Can you imagine if that created more complications based on, you know, whatever damage they did? Fortunately, it didn't, because I do think it's a really good setup out at Edmonton with that whole thing. It's a brand new complex. You know, it connects so well. There's a lot to like there.
Mm-hmm. We're going to hit pause. We're going to come back to that. Jason Stark is a good friend of ours. We used to do a weekly with him for many, many, many years. He just tweeted out a trivia question. Did you see it? Because I know you follow him like I do. Did you see the question and the answers?
I have not. I have not seen it yet.
All right. Let's play along. Let's get everybody ready for 1 o'clock, okay? Here's Jason Stark's baseball trivia question today. Name the only three pitchers who will be able to say after today that they have now started opening day in each of the last 3 years. Name the only three pitchers who will be able to say after today that they have started opening day in each of the last 3 years. What do you got?
Max Scherzer.
Max Scherzer. Ding! That is correct. Oh, there we go.
Jacob DeGrom.
Jacob DeGrom. Incorrect.
What?
Do you dare question Jason Stark?
No, but I just thought Jacob DeGrom would have started the last three opening days. Why? I wonder why it would happen. I'm trying to remember what happened.
Obviously, Kershaw would have been a correct answer, but we know that that did not happen last night. But actually, I don't think he started last year either, did he? Now that I think about it, so Kershaw would not have been.
He started the year injured last year.
Yeah, so, okay. So scrap.
Madison Bumgarner.
Madison Bumgarner is incorrect. He did not start in 2018.
What?
He did not start in 2018. So Bumgarner, who, by the way, will start today for the Arizona Diamondbacks. That'll be strange to see Mad Bum in the D-backs uniform.
Justin Verlander.
Justin Verlander is the answer. What do we got? There we go. Number one, actually. This will be 5 years in a row for Justin Verlander. He has done it more than anybody. Scherzer is 3 years in a row. Verlander, 5 years in a row, and you're missing the third.
Aaron Nola.
Aaron Nola is indeed correct. Another guess that a lot of people say would be Corey Kluber, and that he did not start. He will not start this year, so Corey Kluber, cross him off the list. So there you go. Verlander, Scherzer, and Nola. Only three pitchers that can say that they have started at least in the last 3 years on opening day. Verlander, Scherzer, and
you would
Nola.
Think the list would have more guys.
I agree.
It just shows you how volatile
It
is for starting pitchers. Pitchers in general, I think. There's just so few that can do it year in, year out. I wonder what a streak of guys in the 80s. Let's just take Steve Carlton, Tom Seaver, Nolan Ryan, and some guys of that era. How many straight years they started opening day? I wonder what the longest streak was in the 70s or 80s. You know, an unquestioned ace. Like, I got to believe there was a stretch where Steve Carlton must have started seven or eight straight opening days for the Phillies, don't you think?
I would make
that assumption.
Yes.
I don't know that for sure, but he never got hurt, and he was always the best pitcher for the Phillies. Same thing with Tom Seaver.
I mean, what was Randy Johnson?
Nolan Ryan, I would guess, fits into that too. Maddox. We'll see. The Braves had so many great starters, but I guess Maddox would have had a run with the Braves of probably 4, 5, 6 years in a row. That'd be an interesting
I mean, the question was for three, so I'd have to believe he would be in the category of 3 years in a row, right? There's no doubt about that. I mean, Randy Johnson.
Oh yeah,
for
well,
sure.
Three. I mean, three
back in those days would not have been all that easy. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what kind of streak we're looking at for the ones that got the longest. I'd have to say it got to eight years in some cases for some of the best guys.
One of the other pieces of baseball news is the Blue Jays have found their new home. It will not be in Toronto. It will not be in Pittsburgh. And it will not be in Baltimore at Camden Yards. Going back to the original suggestion of Buffalo. So they will play with Buster Bison. It's a Triple-A park there in Buffalo. Buffalo Bison, they've got to make some upgrades. But apparently they're going to be able to do that. And that's where the Blue Jays will be. Their home will be in Buffalo. All right, let's talk about some hockey stuff. What was your takeaway from yesterday's inter-squad scrimmage?
Yesterday's scrimmage, and I actually haven't seen a whole lot of coverage. I haven't looked at it, so I'll just give you just my view watching. I watched all the way to the end. Keep in mind that they took UC Saros and Pecorine out at
midway through. Yep.
A little past midway, maybe, right around midway. But I thought UC Saros got a lot of work in because he faced a lot of shots. And so this is going to be part of, you know, how do you evaluate a scrimmage? Was the offense good? Was the defense not so good? But Ryan Johansson's line, Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, right, the Jofa line, they were coming at UC Saros. And they got a lot of action towards him. UC Saros played very, very well. He only gave up one goal, and he got a significant amount of shots. I want to say the number was in the 20s, even though he was out of there around the midway point of the game. I think the team in the white jerseys ended up with around 41 shots by the end of the game. So Saros was very, very sharp. The Jofa line looked very good. Arvidsson ended up with a couple of goals. They got a lot of scoring chances, which is, I think, probably even more of what the coaches are looking for. What were they generating when they were out there? I thought the chemistry looked good. They got a lot of stuff. I think overall, it was entirely 5-on-5. They didn't play any special teams at all yesterday. It was straight up 5-on-5. Matt Duchene individually stuck out for me for the goal team. I thought he was very dynamic, maybe the most dynamic player on the ice of anybody. And as a result, his line with Kyle Turris and Mikhail Granlin was productive. But just jumping off the ice to me with his impression was Duchene in that game. And then on a secondary note, I thought the youngsters, Rem Pitlick and Eli Tolvanen, held their own. They had some really good activity during the game. Tolvanen scored a goal. They had one spectacular passing play. Jeremy Davies, the defenseman, was involved in it. Mm-hmm. We were watching on the air. We stopped what we were doing. We're like, whoa.
Yep. Elliot Friedman was on.
He was on with us. We're like, whoa, that was a heck of a play. So those are the things off the top of my head that stood out to me more than anything else. Saros was super sharp. The Jofa line looked good. Matt Duchene individually, outstanding. And then the youngsters, long-range plan. I thought Pitlick and Tolvanen looked like they belonged out there. And so down the road, that's a good sign.
Yeah, I'll be very curious to see if that second line can continue at this pace moving forward, especially when it starts counting, because I think they've desperately needed that, right? They've been searching for what a lot of teams are, you know, you're expected to get out of a second line, and I think they haven't exactly been getting that out of their second line. And so you do wonder if that combination, I mean, Granlin was a guy that was playing really well going into the pause, but Duchene wasn't having, you know, exactly the season he wants to have. Kyle Turris had been better under John Hines, of course, getting more opportunities, something we talked about, but those opportunities are going to come on the wing if he stays with this line. And then you put the first line back together, the first line that most have been accustomed to seeing for years, but had been broken up a lot. In fact, Victor Arvidsson, when everything came to a pause, was down on the fourth line. That's where all that was when everything came to a screeching halt. If you can get, you know, Victor Arvidsson and Forsberg and Johansson clicking like we've seen the 3 days we were at Bridgestone Arena and even last week, and the second line doing what we saw this week moving forward, I think they're going to be very, very happy, because it's great to get the production that they got out of Bonino and Craig Smith and Rocco Grimaldi throughout the entire – they were the best line all season long, and that's fantastic. But typically, especially in this time when you're going into the playoffs, if your best line is your third line, that probably spells trouble, because that's great to get that type of production, but you got to have that top six giving you more than what they have been getting. And I think – by what we've seen the last 2 weeks, that's what they're looking for, right? They really stood out, both lines, the top six, and they'll need that moving forward. As for the goaltenders that you touched on at the beginning, I agree with everything you said. I have been somebody the last 2 weeks that has felt like Pecorine would be the guy getting the start just because of his experience more than anything. And the more I've watched this, and I have no idea to know how they're going to evaluate these scrimmages, these practices, this training camp, whatever we're calling this, the lead up to the qualifying round. I don't know exactly how much stock they're putting into it, but that's all they have. I'm changing my answer because it just looks like right now UC Soros has played better. It's a five-game series. They're going to need production right out of the gates. And what's interesting is you brought up a really good point that is absolutely 100% true. If you need the good start and you need things, you know, to get off on the right foot in a short series, typically that's been 35 in net. He's usually been the fast starter, and UC Soros is a guy that typically gets off to a little bit of a slower start, but then settles in and really becomes really good by the middle and the latter part of the season. But right now, UC Soros is coming after 4 months being off, and he looks like, you know, he looks like exactly like he looked like going into the break when he had started 15 of their last 21 games. So I would say right now, without knowing how much stock they're putting in all of this, what we've been seeing and what they've been seeing as they film it and they go in those rooms and they watch it, I would say I'm probably leaning toward changing my answer that as of today, I think it's probably going to be Juice in net to start game one against the Coyotes.
Well, I think right now, being fair, just trying to be honest, it looks pretty clear to me that Soros has been very, very sharp, sharper than Pekka. I think it's safe to say. Now, I guarantee you they're going over that tape backwards and forwards to evaluate, you know, what kind of quality is UC facing compared to what kind of quality Pekka is facing based on how the two scrimmages have gone. I will say this, too. It is a scrimmage. And when you watch, I think the pace of play has been pretty good. It still looks to me like there's another level that's going to get to when you play a real game. They are competitive for sure, but we're not seeing the big thunderous hits. We're not seeing the real physical play in the corners that I think you're going to see. I don't know how, you know, just like when you watch a Titans scrimmage in practice, let's even take the times where they bring in the, last year was the Patriots, right? The year before was the Buccaneers. There's a way that they practice, right? Game-like. But it's not a game. Like you're not hitting the quarterback. You're not going for big hits. You're not even fully tackling. I think there's probably some version of that in hockey, if I had to guess, because you don't want to have three guys come in, you know, right before you head for Edmonton, and you've injured each other in two scrimmages, and all of a sudden you got three dealing with an injury before you ever start playing. So that's something I'm sure they have to try to figure out.
We've talked a lot about the fourth line and the way it's looked to this point, and Colton Sissons, Kalle Yarncroak are two veterans, two guys that they've depended on, two guys that they've moved up and down the lineup over the years and over seasons. Wherever they need them, they're plug-and-play guys. I think you still feel confident that those two absolutely are a part of that line. Austin Watson is the guy that has been getting the nod to this point, but I will say this, continue to be impressed by Trennan and Blackwell. Trennan is a guy that really intrigues me, intrigues a lot of people. And so you do wonder when they'll get their opportunities. And I'll say this, kind of going back to what you said before, we know if we're talking about quiet time that we talk about a lot on this show, Rym Pitlick is the guy that's been doing a whole lot of quiet time when nobody sees it at the arena and at the rink, when nobody else is out on the ice. He's out there. I do wonder if that'll pay off for him. And at some point we see 16 in there, but the other guy is Ellie Tolvanen. I thought he has at times looked very comfortable and visible out on the ice. And, you wonder if, you know, guys like this at some point will have an opportunity, especially if the Predators can get on a roll and start playing for a while. And you know things happen, right? I mean, things are going to happen, whether it's a positive test, whether it's an injury. I mean, it's playoff hockey, and bodies start falling. You know, when these guys or will these guys get an opportunity to get in the lineup?
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of things. I mean, you're right. All of these guys have got to be ready. The 30-something people that they take, they've got to be ready to go. I do think it's fair to say, and I think there is probably still some competition going on for that fourth line, and they have stuck with Colton Sissons, Callie Yarncroke, and Austin Watson together the entire camp so far. But I do think that Trennan and Blackwell have both shown some really good things in the scrimmages that I've watched. If there is a guy that's being a little more physical, and he's probably got more that he's trying to prove in this camp, it is probably Trennan. Austin Watson, we know he's going to hit people, right? Austin Watson will lead the team in hits when he's out there. He's gonna do that. The question for Watson is, you know, the rest of his game, is it sound? Is he doing the right things, penalty killing? Is he shutting people down? Can he chip in a big goal here and there? He hasn't done that in the scrimmages, but it comes back to our question of what's on the line. You know, what are they really competing for a spot in there during these scrimmages? I feel like Austin Watson probably will get the first crack at it, but I thought Trennan was good yesterday, and Colin Blackwell was on the line with Ellie Tolvin and Rem Pitlick, and they were really good. I mean, they were noticeable throughout the scrimmage yesterday. They played with a lot of speed, a lot of jump, got a lot of chances, and got a goal in there.
You know who another guy that I've noticed, and we've said it more every time we've referenced him, just about his frame, but I'm not talking about that. Like, I've actually noticed him out there, and I am curious to know a little bit more about him, is McCarron, who they got. The guy, like I said, he's very noticeable.
Yeah, he actually scored two goals yesterday.
He's a big frame, but I've noticed more than just the big frame in these scrimmages. What about you?
Yeah, he's big. It's hard not to notice that guy.
Noticed his play. It's not more. It's not even. I'm not even.
Yeah,
referencing
he scored
his frame
two. He
right
scored
now.
Two goals. You got to give him credit. He did a nice job. So it was him and Trennan were on the same line. I'm blanking on who the third guy on that line was, but I thought they looked good out there, and I don't think McCarron figures in the early part. Unless the depth gets to that point, but this is a great opportunity for him to sort of show that he belongs in the mix, that he can be a good depth player, and it probably means a lot. I don't know what his contract status is, if they have his rights going through next year or not, but he's a guy that's been kind of a 4A guy to this point, right? A guy that's right on the fringe of making it, but not on not with any real regularity. So he's trying to change that, and he's taking advantage of it.
They really like Jeremy Davies. He's one of the guys they got in the PK Subban trade. What do you make of him? And I'm not talking about right now. Like, I don't think he's going to be able to crack this lineup. But the more opportunities he gets to be with the club and be around these guys, and more opportunities he gets, you do wonder like when his day will come, right? Because he's
sure.
Young.
I think next year will be a very good competition because I don't know for sure, but I mean you Dan Hamhuis and Yannick Weber, I think at this point, I'm not sure they will be back next year. They're both free agents, and I think the organization would like to take a leap of faith with guys like Tenorti, Alex Carrier, and Davies. And Davies is the guy that probably has the most offensive talent. He's one of those guys that has a little bit more of the modern puck-moving skill, right? He's a really good passer. He's a good skater. The question for him will be, you know, can he hold his own defensively? I think Carrier has had a little more time as a professional. He's had a lot more seasoning in Milwaukee. He's kind of waited his turn. I think they feel like, and he's even played a couple of NHL games, right, for the Predators. So that'll be a good battle. I think they'll whatever they decide, it'll be a great competition next year for who plays on the third pair. And right now, we would have to think, right, that the Tenorti and Holzer have the inside track with the size to get the first chance in the first qualifying round.
I don't know what their exact reasons are on why they like them. Obviously, they have the size, but whatever they like about those guys, yeah, the answer for me is yes to your question. Yes, I just – it's very clear that they like – especially Tenorti. I mean, they just – I just think there's something about Tenorti that they really like, and I don't think there's any way he is not a part of that third D pairing. And right now it looks like, you know, on the other side of him, it's going to be Holzer. The guys, the two guys that were together when after they beat Montreal and went into and never were able to play against Toronto, that was the third D pairing. And so, yes, I don't know what their list of reasons besides their size. Clearly they bring that to the table. I mean, both
guys and that's what they were showing. Remember the games against Dallas, the back-to-back shutouts?
Mm-hmm.
I thought in those games, those two guys defended very well. That's their strength. With their size and the system that the Predators are playing, which is different than the Peter Laviolette system, I think that gave new life to Jared Tenorti and new life to Holzer, who was a better fit for John Hines' system. They are not the modern puck-moving guys, right? You're not going to see them skate from end to end or make this beautiful long outlet pass, but they can defend. And so if you sort of say, listen, we're going to get our puck moving from our top four guys, we just want these guys to make sure that when they're on the ice, they defend and they can get it out of the zone. You know, they're a little more of the old school, you know, Hal Gill-type defenseman, just rock solid, use your size, defend and not let anybody get anything easy. Now, what will analytics say about that? They'll say, well, those guys, maybe they're giving up a little more possession. Maybe there's more shots coming the goalie's way when they're on the ice. But if as long as they're not quality shots, then I think you can live with it, because we're talking what, Darren? You want 10 to 12 minutes from those guys for the most part.
Yep.
Right? Maybe a little penalty killing mixed in there, but at even strength, you're not asking those guys to play that much.
Nope. Nope. So you don't think that we're going to be all of a sudden, is that Yossi? Oh, no, wait a minute. That's Holzer. You understand that?
Things that you will not say.
Things you will not be confused by. Is that Roman? No, wait a minute. That's Tenorti. Things you won't get mixed up on. But you're right. They did. They provided more of a shutdown defense. And what would Hal Gill say about their analytics? He'd say, analytics, hooey fooey. That's what Hal would say.
Yeah, I think he's come around to a degree, but I think what Hal has come to believe is that the analytics usually just line up with what he's seeing anyway. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a tool. I like we said, it's really become an important process to marry together, you know, what the observer sees. What does the coach see? What's the player feeling out there? And then what do the numbers tell you? And what can you learn from both sides, right? If you're just looking at one or the other, you're going to miss out.
Totally. 100% agree. I think that's the one thing that I really appreciate about what Chris Mason on your side of things on television and what Hal Gill on our side of things in radio bring to the table. They see things not only that most people in the stands or watching don't see, they also are ahead of what you're seeing, because they know the flow of the game. They know how to anticipate things. They can almost project and see what's coming, right? Which I just think is really impressive, because I don't have that ability. I didn't play like those guys, and they just offer a unique perspective that me and you cannot do, right? Because they played it. They've been around it their whole life, and I love that perspective. And you're right. You've got to have both. It's just a nice blend. You can't ignore one for the other. Both are useful tools. I would say don't put too much stock in one over the other. How about just observe them both and realize they're both good, right? The eyeball test and the numbers, analytics, whatever you want to say about them, I think both can be used. And sometimes both being used will come to the same conclusion, and sometimes they won't. Right? Let's not act like every time they will. Sometimes analytics will tell you one thing about a player, and the eyeball test will tell you another thing about a player. So they won't always match up. We will match up and come back and wrap up the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. But first, I'm going to tell you about my friends over at Cool Springs MD. And right now, things are different. I've gone over there the last 2 weeks. You pull in to their beautiful facility, you park in their big parking lot, and you let them know that you're there, all in your car. And when it's time for you to safely come in, they're going to text you or call you and say, hey, come on in. We're ready for you. And that's exactly how it will play out when you go to Cool Springs MD. I know I've just done it the last couple of weeks. You're going to feel safe and comfortable in your visit to Cool Springs MD. And they house, as you've heard me talk about for years now, so many things under one roof. By the way, they've been around since 2007, making a lot of people healthy and happy here in Middle Tennessee. But if you're looking for hormone replacement therapy, maybe you've noticed you've been a little sluggish lately, you feel a little bit off, you don't have any get up, maybe your numbers are really, really low, and you need to go in there and get tested and talk to them about that and how you can feel young again. Face and body rejuvenation is something they house under their roof, and also weight loss management. Effective ways with programs and things there at their facility where they can get you going in the right direction. We know weight loss management and your health right now is vitally important, especially in a pandemic. And maybe you haven't been able to work out like you were able to, or maybe things have just kind of gotten away during some of these quarantine times. Well, they can get you headed back in the right direction. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is the board-certified physician. His wife, Daphne Lodge, is the registered nurse, and their very experienced staff can help you. If you would like to make an appointment or a consultation with them, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or always you can go to their website, coolspringsmd.com. You just made the list. Coming up at high noon, we're going to ask you to participate. See, this is where you dial in 615-737-1025. That's coming up in about 10 minutes. And tell us who or what is on your list. We've got a prize for you. We just ask you to participate, if I can spit it out. There we go. That's all we're asking for. Willie, there's been a legitimate question on Twitter that has been posed to me. And so let's discuss. And it comes from at GPander78. DMAC, I have a serious question for you. I immediately go, uh-oh. I'm like, where's this going? If the Indians change their name, will you change your silly underdog theme song?
Ah, yes.
So
I saw
people who don't know what GPander78 is talking about, Ian? What do I do? This is my theme song to Silly Underdog Picks. You know what? It's a credit to Greg, because I hadn't really thought about it. And it's a really good question. What do I do? I asked this to Chris Rose, who's a Clevelander. He's a native Clevelander. He lives out in L.A. now, but that's where he grew up. He grew up in Shaker Heights. And so he loves the Indians. And I asked him, do you think they're going to change it? And he said, yes. He said he was definitely, he thought that they should. And then I said, but do you think they will? And he said, yes. And we had Matt Lodi on last week, and he said that he felt like they were going that direction as well, that it was going to get changed. So Greg is asking a really good question. If that happens, what do I do with Silly Underdog Picks just around the corner? Hopefully. I guess we should say that, right? Hopefully.
Well, if I thought he had a really thoughtful answer, Chris did, on it. And, you know, Darren, the Spiders, you could have the Spider-Man theme, I guess, if they go back to the what they were called way back when.
Is that what you're saying you think they're going to change it to?
Oh, I don't know, but there once was a major league team, the Cleveland Spiders. It was way back in like the 1800s or something, but there is history there. It's just one way they could go. I don't know. I saw a story yesterday where they're going to have some meetings with some Native Americans, I guess from the area, to you know, kind of feel them out, see what they think about it. And that's the right thing to do. Talk it through and then figure out what you want to do. I don't think it's not nearly as clear cut as the football deal with Washington, the name that we will no longer say. They're putting the number on the helmet of the Washington team, same colors and everything. Yeah, the Washington football team.
Maybe they should do it like MLS and just call them Washington FT. Not FC, but FT.
FT.
Washington FB. FT.
Washington FBT.
Wait a minute, you want to throw in the B?
We can throw the B in there.
I mean, it's not two words, though. It's not foot.
You're right. You're right.
Ball.
You could.
It's
you
one
could
word.
Just say, you could just do FT. Yeah.
Yeah. We see so many MLS teams with FC. Why not them just be FT? Washington FT. I like it. By the way, I think I know why there's the delay on trying to figure out their new nickname. Because so many people have rushed to get a trademark and patent all the potential names. And so there's probably a lot of, negotiations or talks going on behind the scenes. You've seen that,
you
right?
You know, I forgot about that. When we were discussing it yesterday with the whole Copperheads thing, that was part of the equation for the Oilers when they eventually changed to the Titans. I know there was a lot of that going on. And then there was that goofy deal where they said, guess the name. So in other words, like, it wasn't a name the team. Like, in other words, we don't have to take your suggestion. Like, there was all this legalese that went with it. But it was, guess what we're thinking. You know, guess behind the scenes. You're not going to know what we're doing. And if you get it right, it doesn't mean that you name the team. We named the team. You just have to read our minds. It was really odd.
Yeah.
But I know why they did it. But
you
that whole thing is a very complicated situation, changing the name of a team, right?
Yep.
Coming up with the right name, the right logo, the marketing that goes with it. But I had never thought about it that way with Chris Rose, but I thought it was a good answer of just saying, listen, if you're from a town – or if you love a team, it's really not when you get down to it because of the nickname. You know, you'll get over it if they change the name. And if it's offensive to a significant amount of people, then you got to adjust. This is the window to do it.
Yep. Houston Rockets guard Austin Rivers, are you familiar with him?
I am.
You know anything about him?
I do. He's the son of Doc Rivers.
Yeah, and you
a
lost
longtime
to him
player.
In a bracket.
I did lose to him in the Final Four. He is from my high school. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm wearing a T-shirt of my high school today, Winter Park.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just happened to be.
Huh. How'd you get that? Don't tell me it's from high school.
No, I went back years later, and my baseball coach hooked me up with a couple of shirts. And this is now, these are getting really old. These are not from the 80s when I was there, but these are from probably early 2000s, maybe 05 or something like that. So they're getting some years on them. I try not to wear them too much. I got two of them. I got a white one and a gray one. The white is a little bit more, shall we say, off-white now. It's not like this clean, crisp-looking white. It's a little dingy.
A little dingy. I brought up Austin Rivers because he's leaving the NBA bubble in Orlando. He's got a family matter, an urgent family matter to tend to. All right, we will come back. We will start the third hour with You Just Made the List. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.